think of his loved object more than himself. At the time of his strong emotion of love, he thinks of that person first before himself. So the same thing, the tzaddik who's drawn to the world of ideas, think of the ideas before he thinks of himself. His self is only a means to understanding the ideas, but the ultimate is the world of ideas. Now, many years ago, Rabbi Che told me an idea from the victory song of Devorah. Okay? And at the end it says, through the window she gazed. Sisera's mother, this is Judges chapter 5, verse 28. Sisera's mother peered through the window. Why is his chariot delayed in coming? In other words, Sisera was late. Why are the hoofbeats of his carriages so late? The wisest of her ladies answer, and she too offers herself responses. Are they not finding and dividing loot? A comely captive, two comely captives for every man, booty of colored garments for Sisera, booty of colored embroidery, colored, doubly embroidered garments for the necks of the looters. Then Devorah says, so may all your enemies be destroyed, O Hashem. But what was the destruction? What was the destruction? In other words, in so far as Sisera, he was destroyed. But the last point, he's talking about Sisera's mother, and she says, well, he's late in coming, and he's involved in all this type of robbery and taking of booty. Okay, so what is the destruction? Wherein lies destruction? And then she says, so may all your enemies be destroyed, O Hashem. The answer is at this point, she's totally removing herself from reality. In other words, they all realize there's a problem. And even the wisest of the ladies answer. In other words, their wisdom is gone. Really, the probability of this happening is practically... In other words, you don't start getting worried if you're a day late. You're talking a long time. After a certain time, you start getting worried, but you realize there is a problem. But she, instead of accepting the fact that there is a problem, and even the wisest of the women deny the fact that there is a problem. And the fact that they're denying reality and they're turning away from reality, they're destroying their minds, you see, that is the destruction. That they, when you lose your mind, there can't be a bigger destruction than that. Also, Rabbi Fox and his... in his Parsha sheet, in this week's Parsha Bo, it is Shemosa, Exodus 10, verse 12. It says, Hashem says to Moses, stretch out your hand over the land of Egypt for the locust swarm, and it will ascend upon the land of Egypt and eat all of the grass of the land, everything that the hail had left. In other words, it's going to wipe out everything. Then in verse 15, it said, it covered the surface of the entire land, and the land was darkened. It ate all the grass of the land and all the fruit of the tree that the hail left over. No greenery remained on the trees or the grass of the field in the entire land of Egypt. All right? So there's absolutely nothing left. At that point, if the nothing is left, it says, Paro hastened to summon Moses and Aaron, and he said, I have sinned to Hashem your God and to you. And now please forgive my sin just this time, and entreat Hashem your God that he should only remove this death. Okay? Calls it this death, right? But everything is gone. Why is he asking him now? It's too late. What's bothering him? There's nothing to say. Everything is gone. What is he asking for? You see? In other words, the locust becomes emotionally devastating to him. The locust represents a terrible, terrible fear. His practicality is gone. There's no more practicality. but he relates to the situation purely in a psychological way. He lost total control of the practical, and the only thing left is the psychological. He psychologically destroys it. Just get rid of it. I can't tolerate it. It's not a death anymore. It's over with. But he looks at it like death, like a psychological thing. You see? That is a terrible destruction. Now, if I ask you the question, is that so satisfying that he lost his mind? I mean, if he had physical pain, you understand, torture, that I could identify with. Okay, so he's a little psychological off. Okay, what's the big deal? I mean, okay, it's a problem. But the terror, the catastrophe that these two people, Sisera and Paro, two evil people, what they wanted to do and what they did do. You understand how evil we... this is not a satisfying answer. Yes, satisfying insofar as seeing them get what they deserve.
Right.
Right? In other words, what they deserve... Okay, so they're a little off on their mind. They're denying reality. Okay, fine. But that's not what I'm looking for. You understand? I'm looking for something really destructive, really harmful. I want that guy to scream, feel pain, real pain. Okay? You see, it's not satisfying. That is the difference between the Chacham and the Tzaddik. The Chacham could see that that's a destructive thing. The only guide in life is the mind. He recognizes that, and he recognizes that's a terrible thing, but it's still not equal to what his emotions feel, you see? Because he still relates to the particulars. He uses the system as a means to benefit the particulars, and this is not satisfying for the particulars, you see? While the tzaddik looks at it, this guy, that he cannot see reality, he cannot relate to the system. What could be worse to a human being that he cannot relate to truth and reality anymore? Could there be anything worse than that? To the tzaddik, there can't be anything worse, you see? So to him, it's total destruction. When the Torah is talking here, it's talking objectively. When you look at reality, it cannot be worse to anybody than losing their mind. You see? That is a catastrophe. Where you start denying reality and move away from reality. The question is there are people that even a Chacham, under terrible circumstances, he could also lose. In other words, he has a certain view of reality. And under certain terrible emotions, he could break down too. You see? So, what are you saying? Is that a punishment to the Chacham? I mean, what is it? How could we distinguish between where a Chacham breaks down and a Rasha breaks down? We have to make, if that's the punishment, that could be the worst punishment where you lose your mind. I mean, there are people that lose themselves. It's not because they're wicked people. Either circumstantially they break down, or they mentally break down totally, or some people, they're from birth they're mentally ill. I mean, you can't say that's a punishment, so how are you going to explain that? Right. The answer is there are two ways of becoming mentally ill. One is physically, there's certain physical or chemical things. Two is emotional situations. Okay? Now, where the Chacham has made a decision to go in the correct path, and he's moving, he can only move at the pace that you're at, and a situation comes before he is ready, so he, insofar as he is a human being, he did everything he can. You see? Let's try the other side. The Rasha, the wicked person, makes a decision to move away from the world of ideas to live in the world of the emotions and the particulars. As he moves there, he becomes more susceptible to these type of things. He becomes more susceptible. I'll give you an example. The greatest amount of people in a profession that is affected mentally are musicians and artists, because they deal directly and go into the very depths of their emotions, and to express their emotions, they become more susceptible to mental diseases. Not by birth, but by profession. You see? So therefore, the thing is that you see that you can, your free will, which defines you as a human being, and your mind, which defines you as a human being, so when you make the decision to go and live in the world of particulars, based on your pleasures or your ego or your power, you understand all these things, so you have personally made a decision to destroy yourself. That's what you have done. There cannot be anything worse than that. You are removing the idea of being a you are operating and moving in a world that that is removing the definition of a human being. To the tzaddik, there cannot be anything worse than that. Where you make a decision to move in the opposite direction of the definition of human. The definition of human is he has a mind to think and work things out, and he has free will to make decisions, who he is. You see? But if a person, reality affects a person, because he's just not ready for it, so, then that's just the laws of nature. Like certain people are born with better capabilities physically, certain people are born better capabilities mentally, some people are born that they're physically handicapped, different problems. You can't, it's not a condemnation, it's a situation that they have to deal with in life and make decisions based on it. But however, the same thing here, if a person, let's say a person can only be a chacham, he doesn't have the ability to make the change to be a tzaddik, to be righteous. Can only move from wise to, he can't move from wise to, so then if he comes in a situation that breaks him down, it's not his fault. He made the correct decision, he lived as a human being, but as a human being he has powerful emotions and it affected him. That is not a condemnation thing. You see? Condemnation is where you've made the choice to live the life of the particulars and keep moving away from the world of ideas, and because of that decision, you become more susceptible to mental illness. That is that is the destruction. That is the destruction. But however, the chacham, that's very difficult. He might see this with his mind. In fact, he might say, yeah, I better work harder on ideas because this could be a dangerous thing. You see? But however, he can't help the fact that he's still emotional. That he can't help. You see? That he's still attached to the particulars. That's a development. You understand? So that is the difference. It points out, in other words, the reason this thing, it points out clearly how the chacham and the tzaddik relate differently to something. Insofar as mind is concerned, they both could understand the idea. But how emotionally, how much the Torah and the world of ideas has affected their personality, to get a Torah personality, then there are two different levels insofar as Torah personality is concerned. The chacham and his personality, he's using the a world of ideas as a means for the particulars. The tzaddik, on the other hand, has reached a point where he relates directly to the world of ideas. The question is that, let's say there is a very righteous person, and he because of chemical imbalance, he gets a mental becomes mentally incapacitated. Now you have to feel, if you are a different tzaddik, has to recognize that it is a terrible catastrophe. There's a certain feeling that this guy lost out in the world of ideas. He's not relating to reality. I mean, it's definitely a catastrophe. You have to feel it like any catastrophe. that happens to somebody you're drawn to. But however, simultaneously, you recognize that that's not a condemnation. It's not a it wasn't self-inflicted destruction. There's a difference. In other words, let's say, for instance, the Torah says that death is a punishment. Well, everybody dies. And let's say, for instance, there's a righteous person in his genes. He can only live to 50. That's his genes. I mean, that's not a punishment. Certain people, if they die at 50, that's a punishment. Certain people that die at 50, that's not a punishment. That's just the genes. So you have to distinguish between the human being as a human being. You see? In other words, that's what I'm saying. It's not satisfying to the Chacham because practically there's no difference. You would say, well, why does he deserve it? Why should it happen to him? Why is that? What did he do wrong? The answer is the Tzaddik didn't do anything wrong. There's nothing wrong. The only thing is I feel bad that, look, the laws of nature took effect on him and it's a harm. And I have to feel bad for it. I do feel bad. You know what I mean? I can feel devastated. But it's not a question against God. You see? It's not a question against God. But the Chacham, that answer is not satisfying to the Chacham. Even though he could recognize it with his mind he sees exactly what the Tzaddik, it's a rational answer. But however, to the Chacham, the wise person, the answer is not satisfying. It's not a satisfying answer, because he says, because emotionally, all he sees is that a righteous person is getting pain, and the whole reason why he is involved in the world of ideas is to get the most amount of pleasure for the least amount of pain. He doesn't feel a difference. He sees with his mind the difference, but he doesn't feel the difference. You see? Because of where he is at, insofar as his Torah personality is developed. There's the mind development in Torah, and then there's the personality developing according to the ideas of Torah. You see? So his personality has not developed where he could accept that idea. But however, the Tzaddik sees it clearly. This is the system in the laws of nature, so therefore the things happen. But where a person makes a choice to destroy himself insofar as he's human, you understand? The greatest punishment for him is that he loses his mind. Because that's the decision he made. It's a result of his decision that he lost his mind. He wouldn't have lost his mind in this situation if he didn't make this decision. You see? But then you see Paro, this is, I think, the seventh plague. Paro wasn't affected till the seventh plague. He had a strong personality. He stuck to the practical. You understand? As long as the practical punishment was over, so that's it. Then he didn't care. But here, even the practical punishment was over, he was still bothered. Here you see a breakdown in the personality. But that was as a result of his lifestyle, not because of some chemical imbalance. Boy, he didn't develop enough. Like a Chacham, he didn't develop enough. There's certain situations even the Chacham would break down in, where the Tzaddik wouldn't. But it's because of his own free will decision. Well, that's not very satisfying. You know what I mean? But for the Tzaddik, it's very satisfying. Objectively, it can't be a worse destruction where a guy loses his mind. I would just like to make one clarification, and that is this. There is sometimes a society that, let's say, destroyed by a catastrophe. Okay, so sometimes we say it's just in the laws of nature, God was not involved. Okay? Now the thing is, insofar as society is concerned, society also makes a decision to live the life of wisdom or to live the life of pleasure. In other words, a lot of people today, based on our society, because we just follow this, for those people that just follow society, you know, made a decision to look for the life of pleasure. And they've weakened themselves, and so the society is destroyed based on a free will decision of the total society. You see, because society is made up of human beings, and human beings have free will. Okay, now society, where people follow the society, where they follow one person in the society, that's their choice, to follow the society. Well, that's a dangerous choice if the society is living a life of pleasure or a life of power, and they follow that society. You'd be better off, you'd be lucky if you were born in the time of Solomon, where wisdom was the way of society. Then you'd be a better chance of better success at following society. But however, the thing is, that's also a destruction based on a free will decision. A whole society could be destroyed based on a free will decision. The question is that sometimes in society, a person, when you're drawn into society, you don't have the ability. When you're drawn into the power of the society, you don't have the ability. Certain people don't have the ability to pull out. Okay, and therefore you can't condemn it. And the truth is that there is a Gemara that way, where there was a Tana, author of the Mishnah, one of our greatest sages, that he said he had a dream. He came and gave a class, and he was talking about Ahav. Ahav was the worst king of all the kings of Israel. So to put him down, he says, my student Ahav. That night he had a dream, and Ahav came to him in the dream. And he said, and Ahav said to him, he said to the Tana, the author of a Mishnah, he says, if you were in my generation, you would have grabbed onto my coattail and ran after me to worship idols. The next day the Tana woke up, he says, my teacher Ahav. In other words, he recognized that this author was lucky, a certain amount of luck, that he was born in the generation, or that he had the ability to pull out of his society. And he realized that he can't look down on the people that didn't, maybe not because they made a free will choice, but it was because they just didn't have the ability to take a step. So he did recognize that. The people that we're talking about in the Chumash, like Sisera's mother and Paro, we're talking about where they made a free will decision to live the life. In fact, Paro definitely could have seen the truth. I mean, there was very obvious. And he should have been able to see it. But he made a free will decision not to accept it. You see, that's a free will decision. Okay, that was really, where you could look at it as a real punishment for his decision. Now the question is what is the best way of becoming a tzaddik? Okay? The first step is to become a chacham. Okay? In other words, to recognize, to learn to evaluate every decision that you make in life, to evaluate the immediate pleasure of pain versus the future consequences or results or effects of your decision. Okay? See all aspects of your decision, all aspects of the effects. Okay? Now, the thing is that is what you have to do. The only thing is there is, I think, one further step. And that is this. King Solomon in Proverbs says that if you want to find wisdom, it's Proverbs chapter 2, verse 4. He says, if you seek it, he's talking about wisdom, as if it were silver, you search for it as if it was hidden treasures. And then verse 5 says, then you will understand the fear of Hashem and discover the knowledge of God. Okay? Most people, what he means by searching for treasure, in other words, most people are involved, put their energy into certain things in life. Certain people put it in for money, certain people for power, certain people put all their energy into family, all their energy into one aspect of life. He's saying you have to put all your energy into the world of wisdom. That has to be the most important thing in your life, that your energy flows towards wisdom. Okay? Now the question is, how do you get your energy to flow towards wisdom? can't be forced. You can't just say, I'm going to force myself. You can force yourself to do actions, but you can't force your personality to change. That's impossible. Okay? You can only force yourself to do actions. So the question is how do you get your emotions, your energy, the emotional energy to change from your attachment to the physical to the attachment to the physical, and to by physical I mean to involve with the particulars, to be involved, to be drawn to the world of ideas. Okay? We'll take an example of today's idea. Okay? Today's idea, we said that if you live the life of the particular, when you're very attached to the particulars, it could affect your mental. I mean, you could lose it, and it could cause you to make terrible decisions and harm yourself very much. You see, when you start thinking about that idea and start realizing, since you are only a chacham, you find more time, you find more energy, you see the importance, how you could lose everything. In other words, the chacham is only interested again in the self. Let's say he's attached to the family. Now, if he doesn't relate through wisdom how to make a decision in the family, he could lose his family. If he makes incorrect decisions, he could lose the basis, whatever he's looking for, he could lose. Because if he loses, if he doesn't think correctly, when he sees that, that affects his emotions. Because the fear of losing, the consequences of losing that which he loves the most, drives him more to the world of ideas, so he shouldn't want to give it up. And it is those ideas again and again where you start seeing the ideas and you enjoy the ideas and you're drawn to the ideas and you see the benefit of the ideas, that slowly but surely reroutes your psychological energy from the world of the particulars to the world of ideas. I mean, I'm just going over and clarifying just again, I mean, that when you recognize that which you are attached to in the physical world, and everybody raised as a human being is attached to the physical when they start out in this world, and when you recognize the only way out and protecting that particular thing is through wisdom and chachma, and any time you make a decision based on your emotions, you could lose the very thing that you desire the most. You see, that draws you more into the world of wisdom. It gives you more time to, it puts more energy and it drives you more to gain more wisdom and to make sure you understand the emotions, to recognize that you shouldn't make mistakes, and more until there's a turning point where the world of ideas become the object of your desire. I think that very idea is also what stops people from getting into the world of ideas, because when they see that, where they sense that the world of ideas is going to take away with their ultimate goals, what they really desire, so they pull out of it. So they pull away. That very thing is the free will, where they first hit the free will between the world of ideas and the world of your particular lifestyle, you see, that becomes the conflict. And then your free will has to make the decision where to go. In other words, it is possible, like by Paro. I mean, the miracles were obvious. But if he accepted that idea of the miracles, then he has to subjugate himself to God. You see, now Paro was recognized as a god himself. He subjugates himself to nothing. You see, so therefore, that was his free will to make a decision. Here he sees the reality that there is a power greater than him, and he has to choose between recognizing that power or subjugating himself to that power. So therefore, that was his free will decision. I mean, seems to be that was his free will decision. I'd like to clarify terms that's used in class. Okay, there are certain terms that the term represents an extreme emotion, like stingy greed, vengeance, those type of terms. They represent power, meekness. They represent extreme emotions, which will affect the thing, the way you make decisions. There are certain terms that we use that they don't have extreme of them. Like, for instance, let's say we talk about family. Now, we're not against relating to family and having emotions towards the family, but what we're against is extreme relationship to family. In other words, where you don't have any discipline, or you have too much discipline. You understand? In other words, sometimes in a discussion we won't clarify, you know, like it seems like I'm coming out against family. I said this is like, it's not against the family, it's against a extreme relationship to, like parent to child. I mean, like, where it's, you see by Yaakov, even the Torah says that by Yaakov, that he bought Yosef a coat of many colors. In other words, he went over the line there. You say it shows a certain extreme emotion. I mean, by him, he was in a different ballpark, but the emotion was still there. Okay? But however, the thing is that the that in general, there's certain terms that in itself represents an extreme. There's certain terms that we talk about. The term doesn't mention extreme, but if we're against it, we're only against the extreme, and we're not against, because that is harmful and affects the way you think, than the quality itself. So you have to distinguish between those two types of terms. All right, we're in Mishlei chapter 12, verse 8. And the verse says, according to a man's intelligence, does not say wisdom, according to a man's intelligence will he be praised. But the distorted of heart means that he really operates without thought, right? He operates without thought, will be put to shame. Okay? And the Rabban points out that this is not only in the by the world of people that respect wisdom, but it is the whole world that respects intelligence. Okay? So the question is, that's not really true. I mean, there are people that do not respect it. So, and they do not praise it. So the question is, what is Mishlei Proverbs talking about? In other words, the Rabban gets it from the verse, because according to his intelligence will a man be praised, and he makes it very general. He doesn't say only the wise will praise him. He says, according to his intelligence, a man will be praised. It's very universal. Doug wants to say that you see that people that are successful by virtue of their mind, so because they're successful, so therefore they're looked up to and praised to. But are they being praised by virtue of their mind or by virtue of their success? Now the thing is that it's success. So therefore, the question again still remains, where is it that a person is looked up to based on his mind? Doug wants to make a distinction. He wants to say, let's say, for instance, a person wins a lottery. So the guy might be envied, but they wouldn't praise him that he accomplished anything. But however, the person that works out a rational way of working out success, most success is dependent on the mind, and so therefore the success is really related to the mind. That's what Doug wants to say. The question that Ruth asked against that is that you'll find people that have great intelligence, but you don't see anybody praising them. They only praise for the success, not for their intelligence. I'd like to change the subject slightly. Every human being is guided by cause and effect. In other words, let's take the paranoid person. The person is paranoid. And he says, that person hates me. Therefore, he wants to hurt me and kill me. Therefore, I should protect myself and kill him or hurt him before he hurts me. So this cause and effect. And even though the guy might be totally psychotic and his premise is wrong, but he works with his mind naturally works with cause and effect. He must have cause and effect. In other words, every human being, even if he's psychotic, must use cause and effect. That's the way the human being works. The mind has cause and effect. Now, what science does is science will say, well, just one minute, like in the case that we gave before, let's investigate if he really hates you. Maybe your premise is wrong. You understand? What science is they make you more precise about the subject matter. You see? And so that the cause and effect fits in. Like certain people will say, oh, he caught a cold because he wasn't wearing a scarf. Scientists will say, well, one minute, does feeling cold cause you to have the disease cold? They would say no. They would say it's germs. So the thing is that they're more precise in how they relate the cause and effect, but however, every human being must have cause and effect. If a human being didn't have cause and effect, you could never talk to him. That would be an animal, total animal, without the mind working based on cause and effect. Okay? The only difference is that you check out your cause and effect, so to make sure that you that you do it right, that it's worked out right, that it's worked out correctly. Now, every human being makes decisions, okay, and everything they do is based on a decision. And that decision is based on a certain value system. Like, for instance, let's say you gossip about a person that doesn't dress well. So it's your value system that you should, there's a certain way of dressing, and I determine what is the correct way of dressing. You don't dress that way, so therefore, you're wrong. And therefore, there's something the matter with you. So every decision, I mean, let's say, for instance, you steal something that nobody would prosecute for. Let's say you take a 37-cent stamp and use it for yourself. You're working for a big company. First of all, the odds are you will not get caught. And secondly, they're not going to prosecute you over 37 cents. So the thing is that if you do take it, then your philosophy is that you have the right to steal as long as you're not going to pay the consequences. There's nothing wrong in stealing unless you're going to pay the consequences. So that's your philosophy. So if a person has the chance to steal and get away with it, and he doesn't, then the world will look at him as being stupid. Like, for instance, if a person has a chance to cheat on his taxes, and he doesn't, the world will look at him, I mean, you could have gotten away with paying taxes just to the government, and so they would look down on you, you see, for not stealing. So everybody makes judgments based on their value system. Every human being does that. Now, I say that what science, the study of thought, the study of thinking is to the mind, to the cause and effect that's in the mind. I say Mishle is to is to decision making and choosing values. Okay? But everybody evaluates according to people's decisions, whether they are good or bad. Okay? So therefore, if we're going to praise, when we go to praise a person's mind, I don't believe the verse is talking about a scientist, a person involved in thought. He's not involved, it might not be a person that was trained, it's by everyday people. They make decisions in life. Every day they make decisions in life. And the value system is the way, in other words, must come through the mind. I mean, you making a decision with your mind about a particular thing, right? And the people evaluate that type of decision. Okay? I'll give you an example. When September 11th happened and the airplanes crashed into the towers and the different places, four different places, okay? When we went into Afghanistan, we found a tape, okay? And in the tape, Bin Laden was laughing at some of the people that his own suicide bombers says they didn't even know what they were doing and that they were going to die, and he was laughing at it. In other words, the leaders that run the suicide bombers, to them they know that it's a stupid decision. They praise the decision only to fake them out, but they know that that's a stupid decision to make. You see, Bin Laden laughed at these guys like he fooled them into flying into this plane and killing themselves. And if you'll notice that all the leaders that send out people for suicide bombers, they do not do it themselves. They do not do it themselves. They send others. They send kids out that they, you know, like they talk them into it based on the society. That the people that do the talking are not suicide bombers. They themselves only talk others into it. They get others to do it, but they themselves don't do it. So you see that even in a society where, to a certain extent, the public is faked out, the leaders recognize the stupidity of the act. You see, they themselves look at the stupidity of the act. The only thing, in other words, when these people make correct or incorrect decisions, they're not doing it from chachma. That's why the verse says sichla, intelligence, not chacham. You see? Chacham is a person that studied and evaluated. And he studied it like a scientist studies cause and effect, and to check out every point, and he's trained in that. So is the person trained in, and so is this Mishle train you in decision making. That's a chacham. But in everyday life, people might have wrong views, but they know the difference between an intelligent decision and a foolish decision. You see? Like when Hitler was going to go into the Rhine in France, and at that time they were not ready to go to war yet, the whole German army was against it. They wanted to put down Hitler. But when the French didn't speak up, so they started trusting Hitler's judgment. You see? Later on, when his judgments were really crazy and they were going to lose again, then again they started turning against him. But they trusted his judgment because of success. You see? But they themselves recognized, like the first time they saw the world turns away. So yeah, if the world turns away, then Hitler was right. He evaluated right. But when they went to war, when the world didn't turn away, And then he started making decisions then which were not in line with reason, you see. Then they realized the harm, what's going to come. And that's when they started turning against him. They realized that that decision, those decisions were incorrect. So you see that within their framework, even within their framework, you understand, even in their wrong framework, they don't have the right framework, but they do recognize stupid decisions. They do recognize stupid decisions, you see. So you recognize, the world recognizes an intelligent decision and a foolish decision. The only thing that stops you from recognizing it is your own emotions. You see, your own emotions that blind you, like, for instance, Hitler, because of his blind emotions. Even in the first case where he went into France to take over the Rhine, so then the public, their emotions were taken over because he was successful. But before he was successful, before the success blinded them, they recognized that it was a wrong decision. They know what a wrong decision is, but success overpowers their ability to think straight. But you see, the world recognizes, if it wasn't for that outside emotion, the world recognizes a good decision and an incorrect decision. The only thing that Mishle does is take away that helps you deal with the emotions that don't allow you to see the correct or incorrect decision. That will turn an incorrect decision into a correct decision, and certain emotions will turn a correct decision into an incorrect decision. But it's based on the emotions. And that is correct. That in other words, when the emotion comes in, then they have to back it with rationalization. Why? Because they recognize that it's irrational. They recognize, they sense that it's irrational, and they realize that a person makes decisions. In other words, and they recognize that people are looked at through, and in their own eyes, they look at themselves through whether they make a rational or intelligent decision or an irrational decision. They recognize themselves. That's why they have to rationalize, because they recognize that. So they have to rationalize it away. In other words, I think the Pasuk is saying everybody knows or senses someplace where it's a correct or incorrect decision. They sense. But that's why they have to rationalize it. People do emotional acts, and they know they're doing emotional acts, then they start bringing logical proofs. You know what I mean? That they sense that something is wrong, but they also recognize that it's only wisdom that is acceptable. Only intelligence is acceptable. And therefore, they recognize since intelligence, only intelligence is acceptable, so therefore they must rationalize it to make it intelligent, so they could satisfy this part of them that recognizes the real idea of that the way you make a decision is what shows if you have intelligence or not. The way you make decisions is whether you have intelligence or not. You see? So the thing is that that's what he's saying. According to his intelligence, and intelligence here, I think he means by making decisions, which is the subject of Mishlei, so it makes sense that it should fit in here. You see? So it makes sense that Sichlo should be decision-making. The only thing is that emotions take over, and the person recognizes that it's a stupid act, so therefore he must rationalize it to make it intelligent, because he recognizes that his evaluation of himself and his evaluation of others is the way he makes decisions. Okay, the question is that there are certain things that are wrong in society which is acceptable by the society. Like, for instance, stealing. In other words, people realize that you could steal as long as you get away with it. You understand? Most people hold that philosophy, So the thing is, so that you have to say is an incorrect decision. Nobody sees anything wrong with it. So the question is, you see that there's certain things that you're making decisions incorrectly. You're making decisions incorrectly, and yet you're not condemned for it. Right? You're only condemned if you get caught. In other words, like years ago, let's say people were really honest and they wouldn't steal. Let's assume that was the truth. Okay? At a certain point, they wouldn't steal because it's dishonest and they wouldn't be dishonest. But then after a while, people started doing it. Today, everybody thinks that way, that it's okay to steal on small things as long as you don't get caught. Just keep it small enough so that you should not get caught. You see? So now that thing has been accepted by society. You see? So now the thing is that nobody would look, on the contrary, the society looks down on a person that makes a decision to do the right thing instead of the wrong thing. You see? And they would look down on the person that does the right thing. You see? So therefore, it's a question against what we're saying. Because we're saying that a person senses the real truth. And in this case, the whole society accepts this idea. They don't even feel anything wrong with it. In other words, the question is, you see, when somebody does something outside which the society accepts, then it's looked at bad. But however, if it's within this, what the society accepts, so then it would be... that it would be acceptable in that society. So therefore, you see, it's not the correct decision. Again, the same question that we had before. It's not the correct decision that makes it right or wrong. It's the value of the society that makes the thing right or wrong. And another question is, you don't know when a person is careful about, let's say, they will not steal, okay? Let's say they will not steal, even though they could get away with it. Is it because of a sense of justice, or is it because of a guilty conscience, which is a different thing? So we're not sure if this is a good interpretation of the verse. Rita wants to say that even though you, in other words, like this, if you make a decision based on guilt, people will recognize that and they will look down on that. But Rita wants to say that they do recognize when somebody makes an intelligent decision, even if they have the wrong value system. You could tell an intelligent decision from an irrational decision. In other words, along the lines that Doug was saying at the beginning, when you were saying that a businessman, when he works out a business intelligently, he has a whole plan. So, and he's successful. People respect him. They respect that this guy, like Warren Buffett, right? Like Warren Buffett in stocks, right? Now, most people don't go like Warren Buffett. Most people just go with the stock market, and you know. But even if you disagree with him, they all respect him. That he had a plan, and he stuck to his plan, and he worked out his plan. They respect the guy that he did it with wisdom. You see? There's a difference. It's not the everyday decisions that people make on guilt and fear or shame. Those type of decisions. It's not decisions based on a wrong value system. In other words, Warren Buffett's value system is greed. You know what I mean? Like you can't stop making money. You see? But however, the thing is that the way he works it out is with wisdom. So Rita wants to say, so you still see that the world recognizes the intelligent person. He's not a wise person because he didn't go over his premises, like for instance in Warren Buffett's case, his greed, his desire for money. So the thing is that's a chacham already to investigate that. But the fact that he carried it out intelligently and he made his decision to make money intelligently, that people respect. So it's a combination of, Doug, what you wanted to say before and what Rita wants to say now. That the Pasuk is saying that the world recognizes an intelligent decision within a certain framework. But even if it's a wrong framework, but they recognize an intelligent decision. You see? Or in war. Warrior's drive is to win the war. That's all, whether right or wrong. He just wants to win. And he's recognized based on a strategy. You see? And what a strategist he is. So you see, in different areas, you see how people make decisions if it's based on wisdom. And even if a person is not well known, but somebody sees the way he makes the decisions, you see, he sees that it's worked out with the wisdom, that he gives him a certain amount of respect is given. Let me ask a question. Let's say, for instance, let's take Warren Buffett again. Let's say his greed, like we studied from Mishlei, many times an emotion affects the way you make decisions. And his greed affects the way he makes a decision, and because of that he fails. Or whatever emotion that drives him to make money. I don't know if it's greed, it might be something else. But whatever the emotion that drives him to make that much money, let's say, for instance, he'd make a decision where it would harm him because of his emotion, what's driving him, you see? Now, then, how would the world look at that? That's the question. How would the world look at that? In other words, they looked at him as an intelligent person because they saw the success. Then when something goes wrong, right, now the question is, how do they look at him now? In other words, the question is, so the question is, how would the world look at it? Would they look at it to sum total that he had a good plan for a business, but he made a mistake, or would they look at him as a fool that he made a mistake? Okay, the odds are the world would not make that type of distinction. The world, that's a chacham already that makes that type of distinction, but the world would look at him as a fool that he made a terrible mistake. A lot of people would also make the mistake and say his business dealings, the way he ran his business, is wrong. That would be a mistake. In other words, the chacham would say, I could still take his business dealings, but not make the mistake of the emotions, where the emotions make him make mistakes. But the world would look down on him because he did a stupid thing, right? So, but the world is still looking at him based on the way he makes decisions. You see? The world is still looking at him and the way he makes decisions. So it's still the decision that they're evaluating. You see? His success or failure is based on his decisions, and his success or failure, they look at him as a fool or not a fool. You see? So, in other words, like this. There are two types of failures. There's a failure that you yourself cause, either because you don't think about the thing at all, or you think about it, and then some emotion affects your thinking, and therefore you harm yourself. Then that's all Mishlei. But then there's another area of failure. Let's say, for instance, something totally, in other words, like, for instance, the people that were killed in the tower. You're not going to say they were killed because it's their fault. Something totally out of the realm of their possibility of them doing anything. You see what I mean? It's totally out of the realm of them being aware that such a thing could happen, so they can't protect themselves. You see? So the thing is that the world recognizes the difference between where it is your decision and where it is not your decision. Where it's your decision, then they condemn you for making an incorrect decision. They will not be able to accept anything good from you, because the world usually makes decision everything is good or everything is bad. That's a chacham already, the training of the mind to make distinctions and not to look at the person in totality. But however, their decision on whether he made a good mistake or an incorrect mistake, you see, a good decision or an incorrect decision, you understand, that they are saying that they attach that to his intelligence or foolishness. The question is, let's say, for instance, a person makes a decision that is totally not acceptable by the public. But however, the decision will show up in 50 years later that it was a correct decision. Then he's accepted by the world. In other words, Churchill was against making any deals with Hitler. And at that time, everybody thought he was crazy. And they went along with the prime minister of the time. And anyway, it was the prime minister before the war. And Churchill was coming out against any type of deal with the Nazis. He recognized that you can't make deals with evil. Okay? And nobody listened to him. Nobody listened to him. And somebody made a deal with Hitler, and they gave over Czechoslovakia at the time. They gave up a lot of people over to Hitler so that Hitler would have a pact of peace, that he wouldn't start any more wars. And then, of course, Hitler attacked Poland. Okay? But the thing is that you see that Churchill was right. And at one point, because of their powerful emotions, they didn't accept it. But then they recognized he was right, you see. And they attached that at that time to his intelligence, that he thought it out beforehand. So they didn't recognize that the world only recognizes things through results, but even in the results, they recognize an intelligent decision, or where a good thing comes out, not despite a stupid decision, like buying a lottery, you understand, and you make it, and you make the money. But the thing is, people recognize it was not an intelligent decision. But people recognize, the world recognizes, when it's an intelligent decision and when not, but they only could recognize it when there's a result, you see? Then they attach that result to the intelligence or lack of. In other words, what we're saying, that it's an important idea to recognize that what Michelet is saying is that it's a natural thing that people recognize who you are by how you make decisions. The only difference is that the world recognizes, it's like cause and effect. Everybody works on cause and effect. Everybody thinks by cause and effect, makes decisions based on cause and effect, but it's only the scientists that make sure it's perfect. The same thing here, everybody makes decisions based, they evaluate people. They evaluate people based on their decisions. That's how they evaluate, based on their decisions. And even though it's not perfected, and Michelet helps you perfect that, but every human being recognizes that you're evaluated based on your decisions. The question is like this: What is the benefit of that we have to obey God before we know the philosophy of what the benefit is? For example, let's say, for instance, God says jump. My obligation is to ask how high, not why. Or for instance, God tells you to build the sukkah. I have to ask him what are the dimensions, not what's the philosophy behind it. What we want to know is, what is the benefit of just obeying God before we know the philosophy? In other words, we want to know the philosophy of why we should only obey God without philosophy. So the question is, why should we obey God before we know the philosophy? Okay? We have the right to know the philosophy, but only after we obey God. But the question is, why is it, what is the benefit that we should obey God? The question is, how do we look at God? Okay? Who is God? Okay? Now, we don't know who God is, so we know certain things that he did. Okay? One of the things that he did, the basic foundation is from everything, is that he created the physical world. The universe. He created the universe. And therefore, the Rambam looks at God as the source of all reality. Whatever is real in this world is because God is the source of reality. Okay? Now, therefore, the question is, how do I know what's real? So I can know what's real in two ways. One is based on my five senses. I know what is real. I have this in my hand. I could touch it. I could see it. Okay? All right? So therefore, I know that it's real. But there's another way of knowing something is real. Now, since God is the source of all reality, then certain things become true by virtue that God said it is true. Okay? In other words, like this. Any legal system is only a practical system. A legal system is very different. The legal system is very different than, let's say, physics. Physics, I abstract. Physics is a matter of I study the physical world and I abstract, I take from the physical world certain ideas. Okay? Law, you cannot abstract. In other words, if I'm holding something in my hand, what defines it as that I own it? Or what defines it that somebody lent it to me? Or I'm watching it for somebody? Or I stole it? There's nothing in the physical world that will say any of these things. What is life and what is death? There is no scientific term for life and death. Life and death is a legal term. All science could say is your heart is beating, or for instance, they would keep you. They could keep you on a machine. They keep all your body functioning. In other words, your lungs, your body is functioning, but you are dead. They could keep a dead person beating and going for years. Okay, they have the ability to do that. Is that called life? Legally. Can you murder such a person? Is that murder if you would kill him? You see? So that's a legal problem. And a legal problem must be defined by the law. So since we, to operate in a society, we have to have justice. So this society defines what's death and what's life, what's ownership, what's not ownership, and they have their own definitions, okay? So law is a practical system. It's not a system of truth. It's based on the practicality and what the society decides how to define this thing. In Torah, it's not, halacha is not practical. It's a reality. Why is it a reality? Because the source of halacha is God. And since God is the source of all reality, whatever he says must be a reality. Okay? Now, once I know that God gave the Torah, then I am not living, and I don't keep Torah, and I don't keep the halacha, so that I'm not living a rational life. I'm not living according to reality. Okay? In other words, a person that wants to live according to reality and according to truth, then if he does not live, in other words, if he does not keep halacha, when he knows that God gave the Torah, so then by definition, the person is inconsistent. Because he's not living a life of reality. Because the halachic system to us is no different than jumping off a roof. You know what I mean? You jump off a roof, that's not realistic. If you don't keep halacha, it's not realistic. Why? Because halacha is not practical, it's a reality. So you're not living a realistic life. And that is, and once you know God gave the Torah and you don't live a realistic life, that becomes harmful to the human being. The question is when we say that God gives laws, it must be the best situation for the human being, right? Now the question is, how could God know what's the best thing for the human being, since he himself is not physical, he's totally in a different realm? How could he know what is best for the human being? Now the answer is like this. Let's say, for instance, the answer is that if you create a robot, who knows more to fix the robot? The creator of the robot or the robot? The question is, again, that God created a system, like he started the Big Bang. He created a system, and then the system created us. So it is possible, the question is, that maybe God doesn't know the details. He knows the universals, but he doesn't know the particulars of the human being and how the human being operates, and he might not know what is best for the human being. In other words, the question is, since God created the beginning, but then how the world worked out, that was a result of the Big Bang, let's say. God created the Big Bang. In the Big Bang was all the qualities of the Big Bang, so he knows the universal, but he doesn't know the particular. That's the question. That God doesn't know the particular, so he doesn't know what is best for the human being. The question is, when we talk about chance, let's say, for instance, you're rolling dice, and it's a chance what numbers are going to come out on the dice. Okay? So you don't know. Now, the question is, why is it chance? The reason why it's chance is because you don't know all the factors. Like when he's shaking the dice in his hand, you don't know how much energy and how much is turning over, and you don't know when he shoots it out how hard he shoots it, and it rolls out. But if you knew all these factors, you would be able to predict exactly where the dice... In other words, if you knew all the factors in the Big Bang, then you would be able to predict in 5,000 years what fish will be able to eat what worm. So therefore, if you know the universals, if you know all the factors in the Big Bang, then you can know all the details via that. You might not know the details like I know you. I know you through my five senses. But God knows you via all the causes, because God knows all the causes, so therefore he knows who you are. So therefore God is aware of you via the causes. But he has to know, but since he knows the universals, he must know the particulars. The question now is what is the benefit to relate to a non-physical being? Okay? The answer is that the nature of the mind is to search for truth. And truth is always in the cause. In other words, if a person sneezes, so I know the fact that he sneezed. But if I want to know the nature of the sneeze, then there's an investigation. Does he have an allergy? Does he have a cold? Does dust get into his nostrils? So the thing is that there are different causes. So the thing is, the scientist always searches for the cause. Okay? Now, the nature of the human being is, as he investigates, especially if he investigates in physics, then he wants to know the nature of, or the cause of, the physical world. In other words, it naturally draws him to the source of the physical world. Einstein and the Rambam give a description of what they felt after they studied physics. Even though it was two separate systems of physics, but they both describe the same experience, that they cannot imagine that there's some being beyond the physical. You see? So they're always looking for the cause. The only thing is, Einstein came to a different definition of that cause than what Torah would come to, than what the Rambam came to. Okay? But that desire to find the cause it becomes a very strong drive in the human being to recognize the cause and then to relate to the cause. And then how you define the cause, that will tell you what your purpose in life is. In other words, your purpose starts out as a drive for the search of truth, but then when you find God, how you define God, in other words, like when you find the God of Torah, so then God in Torah will tell me what he wants, and then I want to be an instrument of God's will. Like, for instance, God wants justice, so then I want to be a just person, because I want to be an instrument of God's will. So therefore, my purpose changes from a desire to search for truth to a desire to be a part of God's will and to do everything that God... As soon as I study Torah and I see what God wants, then that becomes my desire and that becomes my purpose to fulfill God's will. Now, the question is, why did God create us? The answer is that why God does anything we cannot know. Because that is knowledge of God, and since it's impossible for us to have knowledge of God, we cannot know that information. We can only answer, I can only know what is the benefit of things in the world. In other words, what is the benefit of study of Torah? What's the benefit of the commandments? What's the benefit of the things that he gave us? But I cannot know why he created us. In other words, when I answer the question, I'm telling you, what is the benefit? Since there is a human being, I can tell you what the best way for the human being is to live his life, that the best possible life that the physical world has to offer is the Torah life. That we could show. But I don't know why God created us. That's not saying why God created us. I'm just saying that everything that God does for us must be a benefit to us. That I do know. But why did God create us? I don't know. You can't know. It's impossible to know because it's bound up in God's nature. And we cannot know God's nature.